Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
Welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet, online and on KBIA. I'm Reuben Stern. For weeks now, the Missouri legislature has been in a special session. Lawmakers are at odds over a plan that would rearrange some tax credits in hopes of creating new jobs in the state. Missouri's discussion is similar to efforts in other states and also at the national level, where Congress and the president continue to go back and forth over how to lower high unemployment rates across the country. While the politicians duke it out, communities large and small are eager to have businesses eventually get back to hiring local workers. It raises some important questions. How much do state economic incentives actually play into the creation of jobs? And are there other ways to encourage businesses to put people here to work in mid-Missouri? Our guests today spend a lot of their time with such questions, and they're going to share some of their expertise and their viewpoints with you today. Joining me in the studio is Mike Brooks. He is the president of Regional Economic Development Incorporated. His organization is a public-private partnership that works to increase economic development in Columbia and Boone County. Welcome back on the program, Mike Brooks.
Thank you, Reuben. I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you back with us for a second or third time, I think, by now.
At least.
We have another similar person on the phone from Kirksville. Phil Tate is the director of job creation for Kirksville Regional Economic Development Incorporated. Prior to that, he spent 6 years working for the Missouri Department of Economic Development. Welcome to our program, Phil Tate.
Thank you, Reuben. Happy to be here.
And glad to have you on the phone with us. Sorry we couldn't get you in the studio today, but we are glad to have you in the conversation. And we hope that we will hear from our audience as well. For those of you in our audience, what do you think could or should be done to create jobs here in Missouri and beyond? Share your ideas by giving us a call at 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And Mike, let's start with this question. What would you say might be one of the biggest challenges you face as you try to bring more jobs into this area?
Well, certainly the national economy is not helping us. All of the uncertainties that are taking place across the country, the challenges regarding, how the country is going to move forward as it relates to building and strengthening our economy. On a local basis, we're pretty fortunate. As you know, we were successful in bringing IBM in. That announcement occurred in November of 2009. November of 10. And as a result of that, we're in the process of adding a fairly substantial number of jobs here, which is good news. But in terms of the attraction of additional talent, additional businesses, one of the targeted areas we're focused on is data centers. And it's not been helpful for us, quite frankly, to have the legislature focus on data center legislation and then not do anything, because that sends a bad message, if you will, to the very companies that we're trying to recruit. So that's one of the challenges we're facing.
Right. Phil, are you facing similar challenges in Kirksville?
We are. As Mike said, the national economy is not helping matters any. Our job is tough enough and competitive enough when we're competing with other entities all around the entire country. And then when you have a national economy that presents the situation it does today, it just makes it much more difficult. I really do want to congratulate Mike on IBM. It's a great project. It's a great project for Central Missouri. And quite frankly, even though we are to the north, it's the kind of project that can have some peripheral impact on Kirksville and jobs. People travel many miles. They commute a lot of miles in Missouri. They're sort of used to that for those kinds of jobs. But our biggest challenge in our community on the local basis is that we don't have currently any existing buildings to market. And that's pretty tough. All the companies out there, I'm sure Mike would agree, you know, they want something right now. They want something instantly. They want an existing building facility. And the competition for those where there are existing buildings, maybe empty in other communities, those communities are willing to do about anything to fill those up. So that's an additional challenge for us locally.
Right. Well, let's talk about that for a second, you know, because, Mike, last time you were on the program, we talked about shovel-ready sites, building sites that are ready to have a building put on them. Phil, you just brought up the actual having a building ready to go. How important does that compare to other things like tax incentives or other things like that? What are the priorities for businesses when they're making these decisions?
Well, obviously, and every individual company will have a different set of criteria they're evaluating. But in, you know, if we looked at a stereotypical kind of a project, Phil is correct. Companies today want to move quickly. The quicker they can accommodate their requirements for space and manpower, workforce, incentives, the better that community is going to be evaluated. Certainly, as you would recall, the ability of ours to bring IBM was predicated on the fact that we had a facility that was capable of being converted to the kind of office space they required. We would not, if we had not have had that building, we would not have been successful with that project because their time schedule was tight to the extent there was not sufficient time to go out and take an existing piece of property and build that space on. So Phil is absolutely correct. The ability to meet the demand from a space requirement quickly is very, very important.
Okay. Let me remind our audience, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today, we're talking about creating jobs in mid-Missouri. With me in the studio is Mike Brooks, president of Regional Economic Development Incorporated, which works to bring companies to Columbia and Boone County. On the phone, we also have Phil Tate, director of job creation for Kirksville Regional Economic Development Incorporated. For those of you in our audience, what do you think could or should be done to create jobs here in mid-Missouri? Share your thoughts by giving us a call at 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org, and you can call in with questions for the panelists if you have those. We'd like to remind you that Intersection is broadcast live every Monday at 2 on KBIA and online at kbia.org. You can watch the video of the program and join our web chat at that time by going online to kbia.org and following the link for Intersection. IBM has come up several times already in our conversation. How's that going? What's the status of that now? How many people have they employed at this point?
They're well on their way towards fulfilling their required number of 800 jobs by the end of 2012, and they are very confident that they will meet that that schedule. I can't tell you exactly how many jobs are there because, as I'm sure you're aware, the company has a corporate policy of not disclosing the number of jobs at any individual site. But I know that their parking lot is filling up.
And in terms of that, I mean, do they have to release those numbers at some point in order to take advantage of the incentives that were put in place?
Right. The company does have requirements of fulfilling information to Missouri Build for the tax credits that will be available to them, which in fact are helping to pay for the build out of the space. So it's, you know, we coordinated a loan for the company to be able to do the build-out and conversion of that roughly 100,000-square-foot industrial building to an office building. And over the next 10 years, the tax credits that will be available will, in essence, equal what it costs to build out that space.
Mm-hmm. And how important was that to the company when they made a decision to come here? I mean, the building was one thing, but that ability to get those tax credits, how heavily was that weighed?
Well, I think one way to answer that question, Ruben, is the company looked for an earlier project, which ended up going to Dubuque, Iowa. And when Columbia was asked to submit information for that project, in essence, what was presented was a commercial project. In other words, there were very few, I think maybe $200,000 in incentives. Everything else was just a commercial rate, just as if you were going out and leasing space. Well, the company did not pursue discussions to do the project here. They went on and ended up locating that facility in Dubuque. So it's a good example of, you know, we worked with the same company on two different projects, one without incentives and one with, and the one with incentives, we were successful in getting the 800 jobs.
Mm-hmm. And Phil, what's your experience been in terms of those outside programs from the, at the state level or other government levels in the deals that you're looking at landing for Kirksville?
Well, Reuben, I would I would take the example that's in front of us with IBM, and we have examples that I can cite in Kirksville as well, where we're talking about building availability and one that can be converted. But you know, there's two other points I'd like to make there. Workforce availability has become a prime consideration in modern economic development. In the old days, people put up spec buildings or they promoted buildings and greenfield sites and hardly ever talked about workforce. But workforce availability, the availability of a workforce that is affordable and trainable is one of the key criteria to being successful in attracting a project. But I also would hasten to add this. I really do believe, and in my experience, incentives are down the list from building and workforce availability. And really, incentives are usually used as a closer. Those are things that come in making the final decision.
So why so much focus on tax credits when we talk about jobs? Why not more focus on things like workforce development or buildings? Phil, I'll throw that one to you.
Well, there is a great deal of work done as far as workforce availability. The Department of Economic Development has great job training programs, there are career centers around the state. We use career centers in assessing workforce availability all the time. We use them in hiring and in the assisting of hiring and of course, in trying to figure out what skills are needed for particular industries. So I think that, you know, tax credits may get the bulk of attention, but workforce availability is something that that gets a lot of attention as well, although I think it should be getting more attention, quite frankly.
Right. And what would more attention look like then?
More attention, in my opinion, would be making sure that our workforce has the skills necessary to take advantage of what those opportunities are out there. Now, you know, Mike's economic base is different from Kansas City or St. Louis or Springfield. There are similarities, quite frankly, between his base and ours in Kirksville, where our community is really built upon the pillars of both education with A.T. Still and Truman State University, and on healthcare with A.T. Still and the regional hospital there. So, you know, training people in those particular industries and in healthcare, for instance, can go a long, long way in trying to attract new entities into your community, just as we have done with a new dental school, which was announced for Kirksville.
Mm-hmm. Mike, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. You know, Phil is correct. One of the key factors in our ability to convince IBM that we were the right location for them was our ability to assemble all of the colleges and universities that exist roughly within a hour's drive of Columbia to help share the value of the certificate programs and the graduation programs, degree programs in IT. You know, first off, we did have to demonstrate, A, that we had the beginning basis of a workforce, and that within the area of Kansas City to St. Louis, there was an existing workforce that could be recruited. We had to demonstrate that we had the kind of quality of life, quite frankly, that would allow the company to recruit the employees that they couldn't find locally. So when you're looking at 800 fairly technical kinds of jobs, there's very few communities of our size that would have that aggregate mix in the community. So you know there's going to have to be some that have to be recruited in. The universities become key because over time, as the company looks to refresh or replenish or grow that workforce, they want to know that there are graduates coming out They want to know that there's opportunities to develop internship opportunities to start identifying talent. So that academic piece was a really critical part. And while we didn't obviously spend money on quality of life on the project, the fact that the community had trails and had bike paths and had strong cultural events, that was all very important in the big picture of their growing this business here.
Mm-hmm. Phil, does the same thing play out in a smaller city like Kirksville? It's a much smaller population than Columbia, so the idea of attracting a business where they're going to be recruiting from elsewhere to bring them there seems like it would be even harder, right?
I don't know that I'd say that it's harder. It's different,
mm-hmm.
and it is a critical element. The very first project I did in Kirksville was an envelope manufacturing company, and after the company CEO looked at the building, liked it very much, I made him well aware of the fact that we had the workforce who, quite frankly, had been previously trained in what he needed, and he said, "Well, you're just going to have to prove that to me." And so we went through an entire day of bringing in some of these former employees and sitting them down with the actual CEO, proving that workforce was there. Now, we have the advantage in a small community like Kirksville as well, in that people do commute from probably an 8 or 9 county area from around us. So that kind of maneuverability is important in filling those jobs.
Mm-hmm. Now, the dental school that you mentioned, that wound up in Kirksville. The other cities were much bigger in competition for that, right?
Yes, that's absolutely right. We were in competition with San Diego, California, and Orlando, Florida.
And what do you think made them choose Kirksville over the other places?
Well, there were two or three elements. For one thing, the community put together a private effort to prove their commitment to this new school. And in a community of 17 or 18,000 people, they raised $1.1 million in less than a year in private funds to be used for scholarships or whatever the school wanted, not just in construction, but for other elements such as particularly scholarships. That commitment was a big thing. Quality of life was a big thing, although almost every community pitches quality of life, and almost every community has quality of life. We had the additional advantage of the president of A.T. Steele University, who was a resident of Kirksville. That was a big factor. And then also the type of project that they put together in consortium with the community health clinics for the state of Missouri, one of which operated in a collaborative manner right there in Kirksville, was also a very key element in the success of the project. So it was all of those things put together in a consortium that convinced the board of directors that they should be in Kirksville with this new dental school rather than San Diego or Orlando, Florida.
Right. Now, how common is that for a community to raise that kind of money in order to lure a company or a school or some entity into the town? Because it seems fairly remarkable.
I don't think it's real common, and I think local communities need to be very, very careful on local incentives and local obligations. But in this particular case, the community had total confidence in the school and in the president of that school and in his integrity and character. And that was an enormous thing for a community the size of Kirksville to do, to put together that much money in that short a period of time. Really said something about the community support.
Right. Now, you said the small communities being careful about these kinds of opportunities. I mean, that sort of brings to mind what's going on in Moberly, the MAMTEC deal that, a lot of investigation is probably going to continue to go on to figure out what exactly went wrong there. But, there's a company that came in, everything looked good, the governor sort of opened the door for the deal, and now things seem to be falling apart. What can a community do to try to keep something like that from going off the rails?
Well, all of us in economic development need to do our own due diligence. It's there's always a tremendous amount of pressure to go for the success, and that pressure is brought upon not only people like Mike and I, but it's brought upon our boards, our board of directors. The pressure is brought on the Department of Economic Development. But, you know, due diligence is a very important factor. And we in Kirksville, for instance, we don't even do much in the way of tax abatement. We haven't had to be successful in attracting companies. And when it comes to local incentives, we don't do much in the way of tax abatement. Actually, I believe that the taxes that are created, along with the new jobs and wages that are created, are part of what economic development should be all about, increasing the tax base. You know, we look more to the state for incentives, and of course, the state has a much larger staff as far as being able to vet those kinds of state incentives as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me just remind everyone: this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today, we're talking about creating jobs in Mid-Missouri. With me in the studio is Mike Brooks, president of Regional Economic Development Incorporated, which works to attract companies to Columbia and Boone County. On the phone, we have Phil Tate, director of job creation for Kirksville Regional Economic Development Incorporated. For those of you in our audience, what role do you think government should play in creating jobs? Share your thoughts by giving us a call at 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. Mike, I want to give you a chance to respond to the same stuff. I mean, in terms of these economic development deals, what sort of efforts should the communities be taking to try to make sure that their interests are going to be upheld and make sure that the companies are going to do what they say they are going to do?
Well, remember, the first thing I would say is it's really easy to look at the Memtech deal now as we're looking in the rearview mirror. It's certainly a different thing when you're faced with a question about, you know, here's a company that wants to locate in your community. We did not have we were not presented the opportunity to put forth an offer of any type to Memtech. That project was not a project that we were given the opportunity to compete for. What I would tell you, though, is, you know, from my personal perspective, the fact that it was a startup operation would have raised a red flag. And trying to understand what that means would be number one in terms of how you present the deal. I can tell you that we did a $10 million loan on the IBM project, and that took a lot of effort. And that's a company that you're not going to worry about paying back the debt. So, you know, when you think about it in the context of here's a project that has 600 jobs, which is very attractive to almost any community in this country, offering that in return for, you know, bonds and other things, it does look attractive. So it really does require that you do the, as Phil said, you have to do the due diligence. What's the information behind it? You know, as the bankers would tell you, if the deal goes bad, how are you going to pay the deal? How are you going to pay for it? And that's the question that you have to be able to answer in these projects.
Right. And in terms of doing that, where does that fall, that responsibility? I mean, is that a part of the job that you do in these deals that come to Columbia, or is there some other mechanism for making sure that gets done?
Well, the first thing I can tell you, I'm not the person that can do that due diligence. You know, we would hire that. You know, we would hire the legal counsel. We would hire the financial advisors. I mean, we would bring in that resource that would put their reputation, if you will, on the line, saying this is a bankable project. No, I don't think, you know, very few economic development individuals in this country would have the ability to do the background check to go and with a firm statement say this is a good deal.
Right. And then in terms of even a company like IBM, I mean, there were questions as to how to enforce IBM's commitments in terms of what it said it's going to do in terms of the number of jobs and the salaries of those jobs and things like that. How are those things worked into a deal? I mean, how is there – what sort of enforcement mechanism is there to keep IBM up to the commitments that it made at the beginning?
Well, I guess, you know, to give you both the community and the state perspective, from the state perspective, they do require annual reporting of the jobs. And if the jobs are not created, the state doesn't give the incentive, or the incentive is better stated, is equal to the jobs. So if you don't fulfill the number of jobs that you are destined to establish to get your full benefit, then your benefit is going to be deducted by some amount. From a community perspective, we own the building. There's a 10-year lease on that building that IBM is required to pay for. So if they left tomorrow, we own a $3 million plus or minus building that's now worth $10 or $11 million because it's finished. We can turn right around and work to recruit somebody else. So we walk out of it with a vastly We walk away from this deal, if that were to happen, with a facility that is much better able to help us attract another employer.
Right. So in terms of one of the protections is write a deal that's going to be beneficial
that's
if
right.
it falls apart.
That's right.
Ruben, can I interject something?
Yeah, please do, Phil.
You know, in the old days of economic development, communities and even states oftentimes would compete. They would put incentives out there, and when the deal was over with, if they won, they'd pound their chest and say, "We won," and if they lost, they lost. And quite frankly, nobody knew what they had won or what they had lost. That day is long gone in economic development. It is required by state statute now that the department, for instance, has to do an economic analysis on every project. They use a computer model called the REMI, which is used a lot of places around the country, and it will take the inputs of both the local and the state and the economic benefits and do a printout and let you know that you are getting a return on your investment. Economic development incentives are designed to be used in the short term, sort of in the prime the pump concept, to incent something to be done that would not be done otherwise. In other words, spend some money in the short term to create jobs and increase an economic base in the long term. And there are ways of doing that. So the Department of Economic Development has that available. They require that. And also, by statute, you also have what we call clawbacks. Oftentimes, a lot of the economic development programs, if a company does not produce what they say, then there are clawbacks that they have to pay back to the state of Missouri. So there are some safeguards built in there.
But those safeguards are assuming that the company stays in business and does what it's going to do, right?
That's correct.
And all that modeling would be on that too. So it's all sort of assuming that everything goes forward as planned.
That's right. And of course, the department also does a lot of their own investigative work as well.
Okay. And that's part of what they're talking about in terms of the MAMTEC deal is to what extent there could have been other things done there, right, in terms of that investigation. Yeah, I mean, we'll see how that plays out over time. I'm going to just sign us off here before our break. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today, we're talking about creating jobs in mid-Missouri. With me in the studio is Mike Brooks, president of Regional Economic Development Incorporated, which works to attract companies to Columbia and Boone County. On the phone, we have Phil Tate, director of job creation for Kirksville Regional Economic Development Incorporated. And we're going to take a short break. We hope you'll stick around. And feel free to call in our phone number, 573-882-8925. We'll be right back. And welcome back. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about efforts to create jobs in mid-Missouri. With me in the studio is Mike Brooks, president of Regional Economic Development Incorporated, which works to attract companies to Columbia and Boone County. On the phone we have Phil Tate, director of job creation for Kirksville Regional Economic Development Incorporated. For those of you in our audience, what do you think could or should be done to create jobs here in Missouri? Share your thoughts by giving us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org, or you can go online to kbia.org, follow the link for Intersection, and watch the video and join our online chat. Mike, I want to give you a chance to talk about tax incentives from your point of view. Before the break, Phil was saying, you know, tax incentives, the last ditch thing to close the deal. Do you agree with that, that that's the role of the tax incentives, or do you think there are other places where that should be playing in?
Well, I think generally speaking, Phil is correct. More and more companies today hire an incentive negotiator as a part of their team right on the front end. Now, that doesn't mean the incentives are the driver of the project, but you do look at how to interweave that incentive discussion into your ability to do the deal.
So when a company team shows up here to start the negotiations about putting a plant in place, there's somebody there talking about tax deals.
Not every project. Again, every project is individual and has to be treated as such. But if a company uses an outside consultant as part of their approach to identifying where they want to place this new business, it's pretty common that that team, that consulting team, will include an incentive negotiator.
Interesting. And do you think that that's an effective tool for government to use? I mean, do you think it's necessary or?
Well, I absolutely think you have to be competitive. And the use of incentives is the tool that allows us to level the playing field. What's really interesting, Ruben, to me is the focus today on incentives is very large. But the fact is incentives have been around since the start of business. University of Missouri is in Columbia because of incentives.
Free land, right? I mean, that was the initial incentive right there. We'll give you the land. No, that's interesting to think about that. So what's changed over all that time? I mean, if incentives have always been there, what's new that's
different?
Well,
the competition has become greater, more played out in the public, if you will. So, you know, when the University of Missouri's incentive was put on the table, well, Columbia's incentive for the University of Missouri, you know, there weren't a lot of people paying attention, I suspect.
Right.
When an IBM comes to Columbia or a MAMTech tries to go to Moberly, it gathers a lot of attention. So right off the bat, you're going to have a lot more people observing.
Interesting. Phil, would you agree with that in terms of the changes, or have you seen other things go on as well?
I really think the largest change that I've seen in the whole incentive picture in recent years, and when I say recent years, I'm going to say the last 10 or 12, 14 years, and Mike touched on it, and that is the fact that the companies that really do know what they're doing are represented by a consultant. And, you know, you'll have a consultant come in and say, sometimes you don't even know who the company is. Sometimes you'll work a project completely blind, not even know the name of the company, and the consultant will say, you know, give us your best deal right off the bat. Give us your best deal. Give us the highest number of incentives that you possibly can for this particular project, when in fact you don't even know who the company is. It's really difficult to work a project like that, to work one blind, but we all do it cautiously and carefully at times. But, you know, these consultants are experts in what they do, and they know the programs from state to state. They have contacts from state to state, and they are there working on behalf of their client, trying to get the very best deal. So, I think the introduction of the private consultant is the biggest change in incentives that I've seen in the last 10 or 15 years.
Interesting. And, go ahead, Mike. Oh, in terms of those consultants then, that's making it a lot more complicated, right? Because you're not dealing directly with the companies in question?
Well, the consultants have been around for quite a long time. I've been doing economic development since the early 80s. And, you know, even back in the early 80s, there were companies that specialized in helping the client find a location. But going back to Phil's point, part of what's changed is back in those days, it was only the very large companies that paid that consultant to help them. Today, small, medium-sized companies are using that resource as well. So, and Phil's absolutely correct. You know, when a project is represented by a consultant, you don't know who that company is. You have to take the word of the consultant that is a bankable deal. And you know, obviously, you don't close the deal until you know who the client is and you have the opportunity to vet the project. But leading up to it, you don't know who. More often than not, you do not know who you're dealing with.
Right. And how long does one of these things take? Like you get approached by a consultant who is working on behalf of X company that you don't know who it is. How long before a deal typically would play out under those conditions?
I'm really interested to hear Mike's response to this.
Well, it's interesting. We don't even get brought in until probably middle of the process. The site consultant is given the parameters of their project. And they're going to start using national databases for workforce, labor force, population, et cetera. They're going to start using websites to identify potential facilities. So we typically will get brought into that project once the consultant has narrowed down the focus to, at the minimum, a state, and it may be multiple states. And once that process then begins, we can see a turnaround in 6 months. I don't think that's out of the question. We had one project we worked on earlier this year that was probably a 12-month process before it finally played out. But companies, in that particular case, it was a facility that would build, so they weren't in the hurry that we described earlier in our discussion about existing buildings. But if it's a call center, for example, it could be turned around in 2 months or 3 months. If it's a manufacturing operation, the existing facilities are there and you can demonstrate the workforce to the consultant, you could turn that project in probably 6 months.
Mm-hmm. And Phil, you said you were excited to hear Mike's answer. What do you think of that?
Well, his answer is correct, but the truth is there's obviously, no pat answer to that. There's every single project is different. In fact, I will tell you that some of my work begins before the project ever begins. In other words, I try to establish and keep contact with a number of consultants around the country. I try to establish relationships with those people so that, in fact, if a consultant's carrying a project around, I want him to think about Kirksville. I want him to think, well, Phil Tate's up at Kirksville, and I think that might be a place for this. In the field of economic development, we plant seeds every day that can come to fruition within a month, within 6 months, sometimes within 5 years or so. There are projects. I'm working a project right now that's been going on for 2.5 years, and it's actually just a company expansion in the community that already exists. But so, it just varies from project to project.
Right.
I agree.
Most of what we've been talking about is the scenario where a business has decided it's going to locate a plant or something, and then they're deciding where to put it. What about the larger picture of actually bringing about that decision to create jobs in the first place, either within the community or, you know, externally or nationally, globally, statewide? What about that? I know what Reddy has been involved in Columbia Boone County is trying to create a landscape where jobs get created by companies that are already here. Can you talk a little bit about that, Mike?
Well, it's a good opportunity to remind everyone that there really are three ways in which economic development can influence the creation of jobs. First, and what most of this discussion has been focused on is the attraction piece. Yeah. Phil referenced a project he's been working now 2.5 years on, an existing company, and that's the second way. We focus on how to support that company that's bringing wealth into the community. How do we help them make sure that they remain competitive and hopefully the opportunity to help them expand their operation? And the third piece of it's the economic gardening or the entrepreneurship piece. And that's a piece that we haven't talked about. That's a piece that you and I have talked about on other shows.
Right.
But the ability to work with the emerging entrepreneurial community to help facilitate growth. And VA Mortgage, as we all know, is a great example of that here, and there have been other examples. So there's really three ways that we focus on it. The challenge then that the Economic Development Organization has is to address each of those in a way that prepares you, again, as Phil's discussed, prepares you for the project. So if it's an attraction, I'm sure you're aware of a lot of the work that we've done to be prepared for a data center recruitment. We within this community, Ready, the city, the county, and the developer of the piece of property have worked long hours to prepare our argument, to prepare the incentives, to prepare the white paper, if you will, of why we're the right place to put a data center. And so most of that work has taken place before we ever had a client to even make a presentation to.
Right.
We can talk more about it.
And, well, why data center? I mean, there are a lot of industries out there. Why is that one that Columbia has tried to position itself as?
Well, the first thing you do if you're looking to attract, you're trying to figure out what your assets are. What is it that allows you the ability to be competitive? And again, if we look at it from the big picture, what allows us to be more competitive in one sector than another? And what we have is the first certified site in the state of Missouri is the Ewing property, which is up on the north side of town. It's crisscrossed with three high-voltage lines. Data centers require a lot of electricity. That's number one as you think about the requirements to be able to place a business. That's number one in a data center is the availability of power. Number two is the cost of power. And so the city of Columbia has passed an ordinance because we own the electric utility that allows us to, in essence, pass through the electrical rate that the city purchases the power directly to the customer. That gives us the ability to be very competitive on price. Data centers typically do not hire a lot of people, but the jobs they do hire are well-paid jobs. So you have the benefit in a data center to get a lot of financial reward for the community through taxes and sales taxes and others without the impending cost that many times is associated with the development activity, i.e. the impact on schools and the impact on roads and things like that. There's very little road traffic. There's very little truck traffic. It's a very desirable, but it really starts with the fact that we have the assets in place to be very competitive in that piece.
Mm-hmm. So again, that's kind of getting back to that attraction question. Mm-hmm. What about the developing existing businesses more and the entrepreneur part of that? What sort of incentives or government things could work to spur growth in those areas?
Well, the incentives locally that we all have is the ability to do Chapter 100 bonds. They're very difficult to use.
And explain that real fast in terms of, for the people who don't know what you mean when you say Chapter 100 bonds.
Well, the way that a company can benefit of that reduction in their property taxes is through a transfer of ownership of the property to either the city or county. And then there's a negotiation that takes place to negotiate what percent would be the taxes that would have been due and payable, what percent are abated. And that's a very expensive process for companies to go through. Therefore, it tends not to be used on smaller projects. We here in Columbia are currently looking at the Enhanced Enterprise Zone as a program that will give us more ability to help support our existing manufacturers, existing employers, by virtue of some incentives that are available through that particular program that then are administered locally. Those are the two main areas. And then, you know, as many of us do, we network with our companies. We try to help understand what their issues are and try to drive responses back to help alleviate whatever the issue is that has been raised.
Mm-hmm. And have, I guess for either of you, Phil, or for Mike, what are some of the issues that the companies are raising in terms of the obstacles they face in expansion? I mean, obviously they want to become more profitable so they have more money to invest in growth. But what other types of obstacles, either in Kirksville or in Columbia Boone County or elsewhere in mid-Missouri, are you hearing as the obstacles to that kind of growth? Phil, why don't we start with you and then we'll come back to Mike.
There would be a number of obstacles. Companies out there in this economic environment are working on pretty thin margins. So they are going to try and enhance their bottom line as best they can. And sometimes even on an expansion, they'll bring in a consultant from somewhere to help them do that. The other items out there, you know, there can be transportation issues. There can be a whole workforce issues play into that as well. And so when we're dealing with an existing business, we're doing everything we can to help them with their hiring or you know, be able to circumvent or overcome any of those kinds of problems. There are incentives out there, of course, for expansions as well, and that can be an important part too. But then you also there also can be competition. You can have other entities coming in trying to actually, for lack of a better word, raid your industrial base and try and take your companies away. So sometimes you're in there playing defense. A great deal of what you can do is just try and keep that business atmosphere that as conducive as you can to making a profit, because that's really what companies want. You know, they don't want to be bothered by the press. They don't want to be bothered by the regulatory agencies. They really want to just sit in their particular company, their factory, and do the best job they can of creating a bottom line that's in the black and certainly not in the red.
Right. Mike, have you heard of other obstacles that Columbia or Boone County Mid-Missouri businesses are facing as they look at expansion?
Well, as a general rule, probably the first and most important consideration is the competition that exists within the company itself. Every company has limited resources in terms of how they deploy them for profitability. So if a company's got multiple divisions, then each division gets a certain amount of assets or resources to deploy across the companies. So our companies here in Columbia, our manufacturers, are competing in that marketplace within their own company. You know, how do we at 3M or Kraft or Quaker or any of our local companies, how do we position the local company in a way that they come out well in that competition against other facilities within the same family of companies? So that's a challenge right off the bat. And it's a challenge that's very similar to recruiting, quite frankly, because, again, you're competing, but in this case you're competing with where the resource dollars for quality improvement or new manufacturing process or whatever it might be are deployed. The second thing I would tell you is, and this goes back to our earlier conversation of the trained workforce, this is where the companies that have a footprint already tend to be more interested, because when you get into certain job categories, we just don't have enough of those people. And, you know, machine tool operators, for example, would maybe one, or first-line supervisors in manufacturing. So there are jobs that we need to be in a position to be able to train, and our best training vehicle for those manufacturing jobs is Lynn State. So, you know, there's some challenges of, you know, making sure that we can make that connection between the training facilities and the people that need to get that training to get those jobs.
Okay. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about efforts to create jobs in Mid-Missouri. With me in the studio is Mike Brooks, president of Regional Economic Development Incorporated, which works to attract companies to Columbia and Boone County. On the phone, we have Phil Tate. He is the director of job creation for Kirksville Regional Economic Development Incorporated. For those of you in our audience, what do you think could or should be done to create jobs here in Mid-Missouri? Are there types of companies or jobs you think would be especially well-suited, or other efforts you think could help? Give us a call. Share your thoughts. 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. I want to shift gears a little bit. You know, Kirksville and Columbia are somewhat similar in terms of what their economies are driven by. Education, healthcare, we talked about that earlier on the program here. What about all the other Mid-Missouri communities? I know that's not exactly your purvey, but some of those are more rooted in traditional manufacturing bases or other types of drivers of the economy. What advice would you have for communities that don't have strong educational health care drivers in their economy? Phil, why don't we start with you on that?
Well, Ruben, every community needs to assess just what, you know, what their real advantages are. Where is their expertise? What do they have? Where are the areas of business that they can compete that cuts out as many of those other entities as possible? Let me give you an example of a very, very small community. The little community in northern Missouri of Jamesport, Missouri. People know it far and wide as sort of a day trip from Kansas City, Des Moines, or Omaha, or Lincoln. And most people will tell you, well, the reason that Jamesport has been successful with all their craft stores, antique stores, and so on and so forth, is because they have the Amish there as a drawing card. Well, the truth of the matter is, you know, they have parlayed that into something that is different and unique. So every community needs to figure out what they can, where can their energy be directed that will give them the best results? Where can they cut out other just normal traditional competition? And that's why, for instance, the dental school in Kirksville was a terrific economic development project. It was not a K-Ready project. It was a community project. But it's not economic development in the normal paradigm of a new manufacturer coming in or an existing manufacturer creating additional jobs. But it is economic development in certainly the best tradition with the new construction, the new jobs, the new tax base, and so on and so forth. So every community needs to focus and target the industries and the jobs that they have the greatest opportunity to attract or to expand.
Mike, your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree with what Phil just described. I would add a couple of things to that. I think first off, understanding those assets is critical, but then to communicate that. So networking is really important in economic development, just as it is in most industries. So communicating to Missouri Partnership, communicating, you know, to the electric utility, or communicating to the railroad economic development staff, you know, building that team, whatever that team is, so that everybody knows what your assets are and how interested you are. That would be number one. And then number two is the ability to act. You know, if you come to Community A and it's going to take 6 months to do the deal, and you go to Community B and the Community B's got their act together and they can do the deal in a month or a week, then, you know, the company's probably going to choose Community B. So understanding what you need to be able to do to get the job done, certified sites would be one way. If you've got property that's can be certified, then I know there's some cost associated with that. But when a client company comes in and knows that, you know, it's a shovel ready, it's ready to go, that makes a big difference. So networking, understand your assets, and be able to act quickly.
Okay. We have a caller on the line. Joyce from Columbia is with us. Joyce, are you there?
Yes.
Great. Thanks for joining the program and for calling in today.
Appreciate taking the question or the comment or whatever it is I'm going to offer here.
Yes.
I'm going to go back to the news bulletin telling us that we're not able to get sufficient generic drugs in some cases. We certainly are not able to get sufficient specialty drugs in some cases. So why is Missouri, in the middle of the United States, with good workforce, et cetera, people that care, why are we not creating manufacturing base for some of these medicines? We're doing it for horse medicines. We're creating an awful lot of horse medicines in the state. Hog medicines are out there. Why not do it for the human?
Okay, that's
a
good question.
I'll take it off the air if that's...
Joyce, thanks again for calling in with that question. Let's go ahead and hear what our panelists have to say. Mike, why don't you start, and we'll hear from Phil as well. Why is there not manufacturing of medications when there's a demand for generics, and we have a lot of healthcare going on in this region already as well?
Phil can probably speak better about Missouri's history as a manufacturer of drugs. You know, Pfizer obviously has had a big presence here in the state for many years. I can tell you without hesitancy that on the part of Columbia, we would love to have the opportunity to attract a manufacturer, whether it's generic or a branded a pharmaceutical project. I have yet to see that first opportunity come along for us to respond to. I think the dynamics of the pharmaceutical industry are changing. More and more of the big pharma are looking to start up businesses in the biotech arena as their research portfolio to go out and purchase instead of doing research. And so that changes the dynamics, and that puts us more in line with the university research and the ability of those ideas that come out of a research laboratory to be pursued. The challenge, of course, with that is the extreme cost to take the idea out of the laboratory because of the clinical trials process that companies have to go through. It's a very complicated arena. We certainly are very interested in being a player in that, though, I would quickly add.
Right. And Phil, what can you tell us about the history of that?
I can tell you that, you know, there's not been a strong history of pharmaceutical manufacturing. Although Purina and St. Louis and so on have certainly, and Monsanto have been into the animal sciences as well as Boehringer Ingelheim and St. Joseph. So there's no reason that Missouri could not or would not support the pharmaceutical industry. In fact, I would say that part of what the legislature is talking about in trying to encourage and incent the life sciences would give Missouri a better chance, probably, in attracting the pharmaceutical industry. So I'm like Mike; I haven't had too many opportunities there. I have. I did work a project within the last year and a half, which was a pharmaceutical packaging and distribution company, and we were in competition down to about three communities in the entire country, and we were not successful. So there's no reason that Missouri could not compete in that area, and brings up another just sort of interesting question. One of Missouri's greatest natural incentives is its central location in the country. And so that makes us a natural for distribution and warehousing and data centers and for manufacturing of things like pharmaceuticals that could be distributed to the entire country.
Okay. Well, that is where we're going to have to end for today. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I'd like to thank our guests, Mike Brooks, President of Regional Economic Development Incorporated, and Phil Tate, Director of Job Creation for Kirksville Regional Economic Development Incorporated. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this as a rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday. You can join us each Monday afternoon by listening to KBIA or by going online to kbia.org and following the link for Intersection. There, you'll be able to watch a video feed of the program, submit your questions and comments, and participate in an online chat with others in the audience. You'll also find a video archive of all of our past programs, including the full hour of today's conversation. Intersection is broadcast from the Reynolds Journalism Institute, and it's a project of RJI and KBIA. Today's program was produced by Raymond Tungekar and Janet Saidi. Travis McMillan is our technical director, with production assistance from Joe Deutschman. Pat Akers is our audio producer. Executive producers are Mike Dunn and Mike McKean. I'm Ruben Stern. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week.